fill your bellies and empty your purses. You're on fire today, Baxter. And White Park Bay, can't think of anything worse. What an advertisement. For your age range, fair enough, I know. Once you get over 40, it's a bit different, isn't it? Anyway, let's get back to the room. If you haven't been with us the last couple of weeks, you may not know we've been journeying through the Lord's Prayer, which you can find in the Gospel of Matthew and in the Gospel of Luke, that prayer that many of us learn to pray in the assembly, bleary-eyed in the mornings. And yet it's the prayer that Jesus taught us to pray when his disciples wanted a masterclass on prayer, when they were like, educate us, teach us what's appropriate to pray. Like, I don't know, have you ever asked that question? Maybe in your early days of faith, you're just like, What am I allowed to pray? Like, and what does God want me to pray? And how does God want me to pray? And what kind of words should I use when I pray? Because dependent on what way you have encountered prayer in your life and dependent on what way you've been raised or what house you've been brought up in, you may have learnt all manner of different things about prayer. And these boys this day asked Jesus, but how would you, if it was you praying, how would you pray? Like, can you teach us your way of praying? And I think that's a really, really good question to ask, because sometimes when we walk the journey of faith for a long period of time, we actually don't realize that we fall into habits that aren't actually what God would have for us. And there are always new things to learn, and the Lord's always wanting to bring us out into a wide space that we haven't yet encountered in him. So whether you're brand new to faith, as many of you in the room are, and you're just trying to figure out how to pray for the first time, or whether you've been walking with Jesus a really, really long time, I think saying to God, would you teach me how to pray, is a really, really good thing to do. And so we've been slowing ourselves down, thinking about his answer to that request, teach me how to pray. And we've been thinking about how the Lord's Prayer gives us some words to pray when we don't know what to pray, but also it informs and educates all our other praying. When we pray in other ways, where it's all of that's educated and informed by the Lord's Prayer. And so it's been really helpful for us to slow down and think. So far we've thought about how the prayer starts with, Our Father who is in heaven, holy is your name. And we thought about how actually the rest of the prayer hangs on the reality that we remember we're speaking to our Father. Like, that's the way we're invited into his presence as one of his kids, which is just wild. It's just wild. That's the way he wants you to come. Like one of his kids, like a kid coming to their father, that's the way he wants you to enter the space. That's the kind of posture that is actually required to pray well. In order to pray well, we've got to enter that way. But we also thought about how holy is his name. He's in heaven and holy is his name. Like, we're not having a conversation with an equal. We're having a conversation with someone who is high, lofty, powerful, you know, good. All wisdom belongs to him. There's nothing that you can say to him in prayer that he doesn't have the answer to. Like, we're speaking to someone who welcomes us like a child, is welcomed by their father, but we're also speaking to someone who's high and holy and is really, really powerful and really, really wise. What a great combination. And then last week we thought about how the prayer moves on, kind of shifts gear, and it invites us into a kind of praying known as intercession in the church. Your kingdom come, your will done on earth as it is in heaven. Where we thought last week about how we have a responsibility as people of God to stand on the earth and ask for heaven to come. Whatever way it is in heaven, that's the way I want it here. And I'm going to ask you to do that, God. And it becomes our responsibility to stand between heaven and earth and kind of pull the two places together in our praying. So we thought about intercession. But it's really interesting. This prayer covers so much ground. It's unbelievable. Because as we get to the line we're going to think about today, it's like a complete other gear shift again. Because today we're going to think about Matthew 6, verse 11, where it says this, give us today our daily bread. Let's just say that line together. Give us today our daily bread. It's such a shift, because a second ago, we are interceding. We're thinking about, you know, maybe even big global issues, and we're calling the kingdom to come on earth, and it feels wide and vast and powerful. And then we're like, and also, can I have a baguette? You know, like, that's what it's like. The thing about the Lord's Prayer, right, is because many of us learned it in King James, right, in King James English, it can feel to us like
that we're being invited into a kind of prayer that has all of these poetic, articulate, high, lofty words, this beautiful Shakespearean language. That's not the way it was experienced in the day. Do you know what I mean? That's the King James translation. But you've got to think about what it felt like on that day to have his disciples in front of him, maybe expecting some high, lofty, articulate sentences, and God saying, oh, and don't forget to pray for bread. Like, don't forget to pray for just what you need. And in that moment, what Jesus does is he takes this concept of praying and he grounds it in the earth. He's like, we don't need big fancy words. Let's just ground it in the earth. And the shock of him saying to us, don't forget to ask for a baguette. You know, it's just wild, isn't it? I love how Tyler Stanton puts it. The quote will come up on the screen. If you want to take a photo, you're really welcome to over these next couple of slides. This is what he says about that. He says, Jesus teaches a way of prayer that invites the common language we hear at the deli counter. When the language we use in our prayer stays grounded, our prayers tend to stay grounded too. Next slide. Ordinary language keeps us from lofty prayers that usher the activity of God into some far off, imaginative place, and instead invites God into the here, into the now, into the concerns of today, what I'll eat, who I'll meet, what I'll do, and how I'll feel about it all along the way. Next slide. Jesus unmistakably rips prayer out of the sacred, stained-glass, ornate walls of the church and places it in the commonness of everyday life. You have to know that the Lord just wants to hear your voice the way your voice is, not the way you think it should be. And sometimes we've been handed a form of prayer, and actually when we think about it, it doesn't feel like us at all. But it's just the way we've always prayed, because it's the way the person taught us to pray, who taught us to pray, because it's the way they prayed. And before you know it, we've been handed something that feels actually very inauthentic and is difficult, becomes difficult. You're meant to pray like yourself. You're not meant to pray. It doesn't require some lofty language. The beauty about the Lord's Prayer is this, and what you may not have noticed is the Lord's Prayer is set inside a bunch of teaching and events that help to unpack the Lord's Prayer. So the Lord's Prayer kind of finds itself in the center, and all around it, all the ideas held inside the Lord's Prayer are unpacked and kind of extended so that we understand them a little bit better. And just before the Lord's Prayer, it'd be really good for you to go and read this afternoon maybe. Just before the Lord's Prayer, Jesus gives some general definitions or general help around praying. And he says this in Matthew 6, verse 7, when you pray, don't keep on babbling like the pagans, for they think they'll be heard because of their many words. It's just class, isn't it? Like, stop babbling. Like, for dear sake, would you quit babbling? But Jesus is interestingly referring to some of the things that we would have seen, that they would have seen the Gentiles, their way of praying. So Jesus is challenging both the Jewish form of praying, but also the Gentile form of praying. In the Greco-Roman world, they would have had long incantations full of divine names. They would have had repetitive syllables they would have said over and over and over again in the hopes that this form of praying would somehow coerce a divine being into giving them what they wanted. If I can just say all of these words over and over and over again, then I will coerce this divine being into responding to me. And Jesus is like, but you, that's not how you pray. That's not how we pray. We are not trying to coerce a divine being into paying attention. We are talking to our Abba. We're having a conversation with our Father. So please talk to me like you would talk to your Father. Ask for your baguette. And there's something about the language of the Lord's Prayer that invites us to think about our language in praying. Does it sound like us? And if it doesn't, is there an invitation to something more? Is there an invitation to something more in our praying? It's something that feels more authentic and is more real and more grounded and takes our prayers from some lofty heights and puts them back in the soil of the earth that we're standing on. This is beautiful earthy language. It grounds us, but also the content grounds us. It's earthy content that we can move from this concept of praying as intercession, which it is, you know, calling for wars to end and for peace to come and for global crises, this intercessory kind of prayer, praying for our city and our streets. And then we can equally move to, I have some needs. Can I talk to you about them? Give us today our daily bread. Isn't it beautiful that we talk to a God who cares about our daily bread? Like, you understand that God cares about your daily bread. He cares about the things that you need to survive and to thrive. Your personal today, like, what do you need today? God cares about your daily bread. Like, it's just the most beautiful thing. And so here's my question, right? If we have this, we have Jesus. This is not just some prophet. This is Jesus, Son of God, being asked how to pray. If Jesus has given us permission to talk to God very openly, very ordinarily about the thing we just need, the daily, everyday things we need today. If he has given us permission and invited us into that, then why do we not pray daily bread prayers? What's stopping us from doing that? Now, some of you in the room, you're great at this. You have a real strength in this area. You ask God for everything you need. But many of us in the room, if we're honest and thoughtful and reflective, we don't actually pray daily bread prayers. We don't get up every day or throughout the day say, this is what I need. God, can you give it to me? We don't ask for, it's been a long time since we asked for a baguette. We don't pray daily bread prayers. And my question is, why? Because this is an incredible invitation. High, holy, in heaven Father is saying, come to me and ask me for what you need. And yet we're not doing it. Why would we say no to an invitation as beautiful as that one? I think there are lots of different barriers, but again, I think this is where the scriptures are really helpful, because actually what you're going to find is on either side of the Lord's Prayer, there are a couple of stories about bread. In fact, there are a couple of stories about bread and stone, one before and one after. And I think when we pull those two stories into the Lord's Prayer, we're going to see some reasons or some barriers to praying daily bread prayers that might help us to reflect on why we are not doing it and ask the Lord to help us in that area. So I want to take you back to just before the Lord's Prayer in Matthew 4, when Jesus is in the wilderness being tempted. And then this is what happens there in Matthew 4, verse 1. It says this: Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days 40 nights, he was hungry. Now, I want you to note that is not a metaphor. He has been actually fasting and he is actually hungry and he has an actual need for actual bread. Not a metaphor. This is an actual physical need he has. After fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. Now, watch how the enemy moves. The tempter came to him and said, if you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread. Jesus answered, and he quotes Deuteronomy 8 here, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. Now watch what's happening here. Jesus is in a moment of hunger. He has a need, and this is the temptation of the enemy in that moment. Meet your own need. You could meet this yourself, you know. You don't need to wait for the Father to do something. In fact, is the Father even coming? After all, you've been hungry now for 40 days. And you've been hungry a long time. Surely now is the time for you to act off your own bat, because is the Father even coming to help? Who knows? Maybe you should turn this stone into bread. And there in that moment, we find the first barrier to daily bread prayers, or perhaps the first temptation is this, the barrier of independence, or the temptation towards independence. The temptation of meeting our own needs instead of asking God to meet them for us. Meeting our own needs instead of asking the Father to meet them for us, especially if we've been in a season, I want you to note when the enemy comes, a season of prolonged need, where maybe we had tried that praying thing, but still I don't seem to be getting what I want or what I need, so I'm just, maybe actually I'm on my own and I just need to do this myself. Maybe I'm not the son I thought I was. And I think that we've got to be really, really careful to distinguish the difference between a cultural ideology and a scriptural ideology. We've always got to be assessing our lives through the lens of scripture if we're true Christ followers. Because a cultural ideology elevates independence. It says, actually, you are good if you are independent. I think that this is particularly aimed towards men. I think women struggle with it too, increasingly so. But I think throughout the ages, this has been increasingly targeted towards men, that To be a good man means to be independent and be able to meet your needs. Meet your own needs. Stand on your own two feet. Get it together. And by the way, you're responsible for everybody else's needs too. And in order for you to be good, you have to be independent. I want to push back on that and say the scripture I read invites us to abide, to lean into the Father, to come to his table, and to ask him to supply all our needs. Scriptures say that maturity is growing in dependence on the Father, not independence from the Father. And I think some of us have been so trained in the way of independence that it's nearly an identity thing to feel that why should I have to ask God for help? I'm a grown man, I'm a grown woman, I can sort this out myself, thank you very much. Because society has indoctrinated us and deformed our concept of what it means to grow up. To grow up in the kingdom is to grow into dependence, to realize that God is the maker of heaven and earth, and every good and perfect gift comes from him, not from me. I'm not responsible for supplying my own needs. And I suppose I just wonder for some of you today, is there instead of just a change of praying, is the Lord inviting you in this season of your life into a different way of thinking about yourself? Like a core identity piece, where you realize perhaps for the first time, even though you've been walking with the Lord a really long time, that the kingdom is about becoming like a child. To enter the kingdom, the fullness, the beauty, the generosity of the kingdom, you have to become like a child, Jesus says. You've got to get to the point of realizing, I am not actually ultimately responsible for myself. I have a Father in heaven who is responsible for me. He is, even though I am an adult, he is still responsible for my well-being. I am still in his care. That barrier of independence takes us into all manner of dysfunction in the kingdom. And the Father puts his hand out and he says, kiddo, would you just come back to the table? Because there's plenty on it. Like, why are you not asking me for your daily bread? Have you forgotten that I'm your Father? The barrier of independence is a real hurdle that we must find our way over. And actually, that's not even true. I take that back. We can't find our way over it. We need his help for that too. We're just like, once you recognize it, if you recognize that in yourself today, the good news is you don't have to break free from it because he is the savior, he is the rescuer, he is the bondage breaker. So we can say, God, I have noted I am extremely independent and I have this deep-seated belief that I am accountable for myself and I can't ask for help from anyone. So would you do something about that because I actually don't know how to fix this? And then let him change you into his image, into the one who is dependent on the Father. I want you to remember that when Jesus, who is perfect in all of his ways on earth, what Jesus models is not independence, it's dependence on the Father. That's what perfection looks like. Perfection looks like dependence. You don't see Jesus out getting a second job to fund his own ministry. You don't see it. Why do you not see that? Because Jesus is responsible for obedience only. That's what a child's responsibility is. A child's responsibility is not provision, it's obedience. And if he obeys, all the provision for all the obedience that's required is provided by the Father. So Jesus is not out getting a second job because the Father didn't ask him to. He's only doing what the Father's asked him to, and he's leaning into dependence. That's what growing into the perfection of the kingdom looks like. What a beautiful invitation. But oh my goodness, what a hard one. And so what you're going to see at the end of the temptations is Jesus is hungry, and the Father allows him to be hungry, which is there's a theology that we need to press into around how the Father sometimes allows discomfort in our lives because he's building us into something. And discomfort is essential in our lives. So the Father has allowed Jesus to sit in this period of 40 days of hunger. He's allowed it. And then the angels come and attend to him at the end and they feed him the food of heaven, bread of heaven. But he allows this discomfort. And I just take a side note there. Just because there is discomfort in our lives does not mean the Father is absent. We need to be really careful that we haven't idolized comfort, that comfort has become our God. So when comfort is absent, God is absent. Because comfort is our God. So if That's how you know it's an idol. If comfort is absent, God must be absent, because comfort is our God. We've got to be really, really careful to not confuse the fact that the Lord allows us to go through seasons where we are not comfortable, because his purpose is not to make you comfortable. It's to set you free from everything that hinders you and enable you to function in a world where you will have trouble. Can I also say to parents just for a second, what I have noticed in my own parenting journey is a tendency to pass on the family idols. So because I haven't noticed idols in my own life, then in my parenting, I'm literally taking the family idol and putting it into their lives and their hands and passing on the family idol. And if I have an idol of comfort, which I have noted in my own life, I have an idol of comfort. I also have an idol of happiness. I really like to be happy all the time. And I've realized what I've been doing in my parenting is trying to pass on the family idol. I want my kids to be happy all the time because I want to be happy all the time, and happiness is my God. This is what I want above all things. And so then I will do anything it takes to keep my kids happy all the time, to keep my kids comfortable all the time, to protect them from any form of discomfort, any form of difficulty, any place they'll have to enter where there'll be a bit of, you know, difficulty or where they'll have to push through. I want to protect them from all of that. Protect, protect, protect. And what I am doing in that moment is passing on the family idol of comfort and teaching them that this is what life is like, when it is my job to make them resilient enough to deal with the trouble in the world with a light heart. That they can go through the trouble of this world and still have a light heart. That's my job. And that's why the Father parents us the way he does. He's always good. But he sometimes allows seasons of discomfort because his job is not to give you the idol of comfort. The idol of comfort will get you nowhere, because sooner or later there will be trouble, and then what will you do? You will not know how to function. His job is to make you resilient enough that when you get into the day of trouble, your heart is still light, because your trust is not in comfort, and your trust is not in ease, and your trust is not in material things, and your trust is not in happiness. All the things that can be taken away, your trust isn't in any of them. Your trust is in him. So even when you're in your darkest night, you are still stable. These are the kind of kids that the Father wants to parent. He wants to parent you into that kind of a child. So you've got to embrace, we have got to learn how to embrace those moments where the Lord is building resilience in us, because what he's doing is taking us to a place where we can sit in the trouble of the world but equally be above it, because our idols are gone and we're trusting in God alone, and he is never going anywhere, so we're always feeling safe and stable on the inside. He's a really, really good Father. And he invites us to parent like him, if we're parents too. So one of the barriers is the barrier of independence. But the next barrier, and it's perhaps a little bit more subtle, is seen in just after the Lord's Prayer. In Matthew 7, he goes on to teach. Jesus' teaching continues, and it says this. Matthew 7:7, ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened to you, for everyone who asks receives. The one who seeks finds. The one who knocks will find the door open. Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for fish, will give him a snake? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Now I want you to notice what pulls these three stories together. The Father, because remember in the first story, it's like, if you are the Son of God, so the Father, and the Lord's Prayer, our Father, and here, who of you asks a father, what good father would give you a stone if you asked for bread? So the Father, the idea of being a child, sits in all three spaces, and this concept of bread is in all three spaces, and these two are about bread and stone on either side. So in this moment, Jesus is saying, who in their right mind would think that a good father, if a child comes to them hungry and asks for bread, is going to give them a stone? Why would you think that that would happen? And so I want you to come and ask, and I want you to come and knock, and I want you to come and seek, I want you to come. And I think what Jesus is getting at in this story perhaps is, if the first barrier is the barrier of independence, the second barrier is the barrier of acceptance. Now, acceptance can be both positive and negative in your spiritual growth. There is an element of acceptance that is surrender to the will of the Father. I accept whatever you're going to do for me. That's a beautiful kind of acceptance. But then there's this kind of passive acceptance that I think Jesus is challenging here. The kind of acceptance that says, oh well, that's just the way life is. Who sits hungry and says, oh well, I guess I'll just be hungry. I guess that's just the way life is. And I think that for some of us, this barrier happens over a prolonged period of time, maybe, where we've had some questions around prayer, and then we get to a stage where we just don't ask for anything anymore because we've got all of these unresolved questions. So we just stop asking and just accept this is the way it is. And the Father looks to you and says, do you really think that I've been giving you stones all this time? I know you've been praying for some things. I know you've been asking for some things. I know you've been really confused about how that's gone. But I need you to remember who I am, and I need you to remember who you are. And I need you to ask the question, do you really think that the one who would give his one and only son, and the son who would give himself up, that God genuinely hasn't cared enough on the journey? And actually, perhaps all along the way, there's been bread given and we haven't even recognized it. And at the same time, what the Father is doing through his son Jesus in this teaching is he's saying, could you please come back and knock my door again? Because it's been a while. It's been a while since you've knocked my door. And it's been a while since you've asked for anything. And actually, it's been a while since you've sought me out. Since you've said, I can't find you here, but I am going to keep looking. It's been a while. And in this moment, the Father looks at his kids and he said, would you come knock my door again? Because the one who knocks the door finds that the door's opened. And the one who seeks me in the middle of this mystery will find me. And you'll ask me for something good. And I will give you something good. I will give you something good. But could you knock my door again? And there's this invitation back to daily bread prayers. You see, the thing about daily bread prayers are this. Daily bread prayers are the prayers that children pray. The daily bread prayer is the prayer of the children. That's the children's prayer. Those who understand what it is to be a child in the kingdom. The children's prayer is a daily bread prayer. And so I think that there's an invitation from the Lord here today to you, in whatever moment you find yourself in life, to be the kind of kid who first of all realizes they're still a kid and that you still actually have a father. And he's a really good father. And he's a really attentive father. And he hasn't left you. But he is waiting for you to knock the door. And what does it look like to move into a new season of our Christian walk where we just ask him about and for everything? Like, be that kid. He's literally inviting you to pester the life out of him. Like, be that kid. Ask for all this stuff. Come knock my door. Ask your questions. Bring your requests before me. Would you just come and knock my door again? I'm going to take a moment here. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. Band's going to come. Thank you for listening.